Okay, I'm Sue, and I am a compulsive eater. And I have 21 years of abstinence. I have 40 pounds maintaining, and I obviously sponsor on all levels. I wouldn't have an option if I was still here. And I must say that, like, just thinking about having said that, this program is superior to me because of our requirements and because they aren't suggestions. So for me, that I say, of course I am a sponsor. I've completed all, you know, 21 years. How could I, if those are the requirements, that immediately after your 30 days you step up and you sponsor immediately after that? If you have a sponsor and they want to do inventory, if you haven't completed your inventory. So you have to complete everything so that we have the gift of having to do this work, because left to my own devices, I would never, ever, ever do any of these things. Like, any of these things. It's just, it's so amazing to me that I have, as I said, completed, and I'm still here 21 years later. I've never been anywhere for that amount of time. I never completed anything. I never passed any exam at school. So when I completed my 12th step of the 12th step, it was the greatest honor and achievement that I'd ever done in my life. I could not believe that I had completed that last question of the 12th step. Same as what we heard in the 6 and 7 workshop that I've just heard, is that step 1, 2, and 3, the knowledge of addiction, is not something that I came in and I learnt about and I got to know about, and that I haven't had a continuous learning and such a deeper understanding of everything that I know so much more of 21 years later than I did when I first came in. What I thought was addiction to what I know about it now, what I thought was the depth and the extreme power of 1, 2, and 3, and the cunning, baffling nature of what the work is that we're doing here. As powerful as it was in the beginning, because I was so trapped in the depth of addiction, and I thought then I understood what it was because I knew then, oh my God, I am addicted to this, these substances, and I cannot stop. The cunning, baffling powerfulness of it that I understand today is much more powerful than I understood it in the beginning, because as I understand it, it is so cunning, so baffling, and so powerful, and it infiltrates so many areas of my life where the addictive tendencies and the addictive person and the characteristics of what has labeled me an addict, a compulsive eater, permeates so much of my life as a foundation on some level. Thank God I've had a lot of recovery, and I can share about that as well. It is an identity that I still say with pride now today, that I am a compulsive eater, and with a level of gratitude, like real gratitude. But it's not something that I, over the 21 years, have got rid of. And it's still a disease that I have. And today I am talking about it as the disease because I'm talking about addiction. And so we don't often, like, really spend a lot of time talking about the nature of this very thing that I've struggled with my whole life. I didn't know I was struggling with my whole life. It breaks my heart to think that I was driving, eating, sleeping, that I was a child that was trying to go through school, that to try have relationships, to try and participate in the world, and I didn't know that all the time I was managing such a severe disease that was in my life, that I was trying to function and to manage my life and trying to manage an addiction at the same time, which was totally unmanageable. My life was totally unmanageable, and managing the addiction was totally unmanageable. And so when I think about the years that I had before I got abstinent, there is a lot of sadness as the child who didn't know that I had this, and the labels and the shame and the stuff that I said about myself, that other people said about me, but as that I said about myself as the lazy, fat, slothful person who couldn't stop, and the other people who said to me, why don't you just stop? And the torture that I had of my brothers or people who would squeeze my cheeks and see if I had something in, or the continued shame as I tried to do something quickly. Again, what we heard before, not to embarrass myself, but do it in a way that I was trying to hide it, and then so shamefully mess on myself or get my sleeve in something as I was trying to pretend that I wasn't doing it. And so I had so many of the behaviors that that more than the actual that I couldn't stop was the trying to, the deception, the trying to hide it, the trying to not let people know, and the getting caught all the time because there were crumbs or evidence or things that were around me all the time. They give this analogy in AA where they say there's nothing more obvious than a bottle of gin in a brown paper bag than a bottle of gin in a brown paper bag. I mean, we know what's in the brown paper bag. I mean, what was I thinking that people didn't know, you know, where all the stuff was? I'm the only one in the house. Everything's gone. You know, somebody had to have taken it. And the blatant denial that it was not me. Like the absolute swear on my life, it wasn't me. So the way that I'm getting to learn addiction, and I'm getting to learn it more and more, as I said now, is that it is the threefold disease. The first is the physical allergy, and that there are some of us that when we put certain substances in our body, it sets off the phenomenon of craving. And that does happen to some of us. It doesn't happen to everyone. There's certain people who can have enough. It becomes too rich or too sweet or too much, and they can't have any more. But for us, if we have it, whether we want it or not, we cannot stop having any more. Now, why I say I'm still an addict is because there are things on our food plan that if I have them, I want more of them. I cannot feel this. Immediately, the phenomenon of craving happens again, and I am in the same restless craving phenomena that I am feeling like I want more. Those things I have to abstain completely. Like in my food plan, they cannot ever, not once, not even maybe, can I ever pick them up. Can we say foods on this? So like something like Triscuits for me or something like that would never be nuts. They're never going to be mine. And that's okay because I have the understanding that I don't even want that amount. I can't even begin to even go there. So the phenomenon of craving is something that gives me a real depth of understanding and forgiveness that this isn't a moral issue. I have something that there's certain allergies and things that happen when I put them in my body that I cannot control. And what happens that when I'm in the habit, then once I'm in the habit, the phenomena is so big for me that it's now making me only want it. That the trying to control it and the inability, the absolute inability to be able to not control it is now making me completely insane, which leads to the mental obsession. And so we have the physical cravings, the mental obsession, and the mental obsession is where, I am an addict and I still have mental obsession because if I start to think about something, I cannot stop. It's as if I'm taking the first bite. If I take the first bite, it sets off the craving and I can't stop. If I think of sending that email and I want to send it, I cannot stop thinking about it until I send it. There's no pause for me. There's no relief for me until I've done it. It will give me the results that I know is going to happen. And I've been told 100 times, I get the message, don't do it. And I send it anyway, and I still get the same result. I have this thing. I do these tendencies. And so when I am in a mental obsession, which is also something that I have some forgiveness around, because I didn't know that the reason why I never understood anything at school, the reason why I got punished all the time for not concentrating, the reason why I have still got friends and people who say, you're not listening, that I've been shamed for a lifetime of not listening because I'm in my obsession. If I am thinking about something, I'm not listening or hearing another word. I could not even think of a thing at school or a thing when I'm trying to have a relationship or be engaged in a conversation. Because if I am thinking of something else, and that is, I must have it, I must have it, I must have it, I must have it, there's nothing else that's going on. There's nothing else that's going on. And so the mental obsession is something that happens to me where even though I am, which I meant to say immediately, is we cannot even be having this conversation if I haven't put the food down. So if I understand that I have a substance in my body that sets off the phenomenon of craving, I've done it my whole life, I am a person who, if I eat like that, I'm 100 pounds heavier, I've done it, I've done it, I've done it, I know it, and I have, thank God, I don't understand. For me, the idea of maybe I could just try and do it once, for me, I have no illusion about it. I have never, from day one, I've never gone out. And the reason why I've never gone out, because I was blessed, thank you, God, I was blessed with an absolute understanding from the first day. If I have it, I will never stop. And I don't know if I have the strength, the ability, the humility, the not that I'm so prideful or egotistical or something, I do not know if I will ever get back. I don't know if I have it in me again. I don't know if I'll ever be able to stop again. I cannot do it. I cannot have that thing because I've done it so many times. No one needs to say I don't know what it is to slip. I've slipped my whole life. So this isn't that I need to test that one more time. And it's not even that I need to test it in my head knows. I still do it. I look around. I can stand at Starbucks and look at the counter. There's never one thing I want. I've never said I just want one. When I look at it, I want every single one. I'll have every one. Suddenly I'll have everything I've never eaten, everything I don't like. If I'm cleaning out the counter. I've always wanted that. I am a quantity eater, and I do want more of everything. I want more of everything. And so there is something that it was just about as much as I possibly could have. And then the spiritual malady is once I'm in the obsession and I have to have something, all bets are off. I am now becoming and being a person that I could never imagine to be, I could never want to be. The dignity, the grace, the behaviors, the moral compass, the character building, the kind of person that I would think that I'm a conscious person, I'm a kind person, and the way that I would suddenly behave, which is to sneak and hide and lie and cheat and behave in ways that perpetuate, I'm now shaming myself anyway, I've got so much shame, and now I might as well be promiscuous, sleep with the guy, do the drugs, become anything and everything that continues to perpetually hurt me and abuse me, which is the same old story that now there's no me anymore. I don't know who I am anymore. I've got no boundary between what is good, what feels good anymore. I am now not living with a thing of what is right and what is wrong and what is good and what is bad. And the root, one of the roots that I will say, the root of my disease, it doesn't manifest the same for everyone, is deception and lies. And my whole eating disorder, my whole compulsive eating, my whole addiction is about not wanting to be found out and doing things in a deceptive way. Now, it does come from a root. I had the original, I was abused young. I never told anybody, so it was the big secret. I would never told anybody till I actually came into program. But there was no lie about this. This wasn't that it was the secret was my secret, but it wasn't that it was a secret. It isn't that I found out something. There was no secret about this. But I kept a secret. No child should keep a secret. But on I went to perpetuate the secrets, and my life became about secrets. And it was always about secrets. I could have anything I wanted in my family's house. There was no lock or key on anything, but I always would climb, take one, cover it up, and take another one. There was something about the adrenaline behavior that is part of my addiction, the high of the using that was part of the eating. It wasn't just eating. If I was someone who just ate a little bit too much, there are better diets than the Siahau diets. They're healthier things. Why can we have this and not have that? There are all sorts of things that could be managed differently if I didn't have all the other components that went with it that define me as an addict, which is mental, emotional, spiritual. It happens all together. There is not just one thing. If I could just stop eating, that would be fine. And I did, as we heard before, I was a good dieter. I always managed until I ate all the snacks on one day. Once I had all the snacks on one day, or all the snacks on one week, I mean, there was that, or I wouldn't have any of the things so that I could have a drink on Saturday. I mean, it's managing it. It's trying to manage, and once I put the chemical in my body, I could never, ever stop. The other part of it is that this is so cunning, baffling, and powerful. And that is what I'm discovering more and more as I get to understand life, as I get to understand a spiritual life, as I get to understand the enormity of this life that we'll never understand. I never understood what cunning, baffling, and powerful is until you really understand what you don't know and how much we can't understand. I mean, it's so hard to understand all of this. So what I thought I understood initially, the cunning is so how things happen and the way they go around and why I am suddenly rationalizing something that starts to become truth. And I've rationalized it, but really rationalized it. It is now making a lot of sense. And the sense now is that I am now not sure at all what is true and false anymore, but not at all. And suddenly, before I know it, lie becomes truth, and I start to know that this is good for me, this is loving, this is kind, this is good, this is me taking care of myself, this is me being well-deserved, and I've worked so hard that I am deserving of the, I don't have to go to a meeting because I have worked so hard, I don't need it. I deserve time on my own. Now, that's never true for me, as my sponsor's in this room, and she knows because she has always said that the day I give my permission to stay home and not go to the meeting, I never feel good. Now, it's such a shame about that. I mean, it's such a, why do we have to have a life like this? Why can't we just have a Sunday morning where I sleep in? Why has my life become that if I get up and go to my regular Sunday morning meeting, I feel better? I wish that I had some normalcy that could be I can do whatever I want. But somehow, as soon as I do that, I am now in an allowance of a something where I've let go of some things that are good for me, and I'm now thinking what is good for me is not good for me, and I've rationalized the whole thing. And it's very cunning. It's very, very cunning because I can't see it happening, and it is bigger than me. Baffling is that I can't understand it. And so why things have happened, I tried to get over a boyfriend and understand why he cheated for so long and when he did and how did that go on. And the pain and suffering that I went through in trying to figure it out, and the only way out was when I was never going to understand. I was going to have to drop it. That thing, I'm going to have to let it go. I'm not going to understand it. I have to surrender to this. I don't know why. I don't know why they say if you make the coffee at a meeting for a year, you'll get better. I don't know why. I don't know why they say that if you will do service and greet at the door, your life will change. And for me, it doesn't make logical sense. It doesn't make logical sense why they tell us. We all say, why do I have to commit every day? Why can I have this on the food plan and I can't have that? Why can I, why do we have to answer these? The question doesn't even make sense. It's not English. It doesn't matter what it is if we're trying to understand it. The analysis is, and the bafflingness of why things happen, is such an extraordinary gift in the understanding of this power greater than ourselves, that is such a, you know, I'm jumping from what it was like, and now to have had the experiences of what it's like when something happens according to God's will that I don't understand, I never saw it happening, I never understood it, and oh my goodness, how did this happen? How did I land up here? How did that open? How did I meet you? How am I doing? It is such an exciting ride of not understanding the baffling way that this world works, and to let go of trying to, and suddenly see we don't have to understand, and how the analysis that is killing us because we need to understand why we have to do this thing, and the idea of just do it and see what happens, and in retrospect you'll understand, you don't have to understand it now, is like so overwhelming in the what we're being asked to do. And what we've been, and then comes the powerful, which is, this is all so big and powerful. It is also, how on earth have I not eaten sugar and flour? And between a meal for 21 years, not a lick, not a grain of white rice, I will pick it out. How did that happen? Is overwhelming. It is so powerful when you are saying something like, I will never, ever, ever, and I am a real never, ever will I do something. Never. I mean, I've just done it with exercise. I have a serious sedentary paralysis in the trauma that is in my body that doesn't allow me to do exercise. It's serious. And I've shared about it now for 2.5 years. I'm a breast cancer survivor, and I've been told that if I do exercise, it will radically reduce my chances of recurrence, and it never got me to exercise. I'm an addict. This does not come logically. I've been told what is good for me and what is not good for me. Last Saturday, I got a trainer. I'm telling you, I do not know how that happened, because the week before, I could not. I promise you I could not. Now, it's not just happened. I'm doing a lot of trauma work. I'm doing a lot of seeking and looking to at my past, where these roots are. I'm trying to have a relationship with my body. I'm trying to do sexual inventories, which I've never, ever done before. I've avoided it for a long, long time, to look at certain areas of my life that have made me paralyzed. And so I haven't even done it, but in the willingness, I've started to exercise. It's so amazing how powerful this is. And that is why I too can say that we are gifted to have a program like this that isn't about food. It isn't about what we eat. It is such a powerfully strong thing that this is, and it is throughout the world, where one addict, Bill W., understood that if he helps another drunk, and we start to do these things. I read this, that the doctors, in the doctor's opinion, where they are trying to understand this phenomenon of addiction. They can't stop people drinking. It is something that cannot be done. And the doctors have studied it for years and years, this absolute phenomena. And then in the studying of it, which they see, one person comes to tell the story, another person relates to the story, we share about these things that are common interest to us, we understand it and relate on a spiritual level, and then what they say about the people, the doctor speaks about the unselfishness of these men. The entire absence of a profit motive, the entire absence of a profit motive that is here, the community that is indeed inspiring, and these people believed in themselves and they believed in a higher power. And this is what the doctor watched about these people. He watched and saw that these people have no motive. They have no, the community is phenomenal. Where did this kind of community happen? Where we are coming together with no, we're leaving religion, politics, things out of the room, where we're not unifying, we're not here for a profit reason, and we have a community that is based on service, where we understand that if we help someone else, it's going to keep us abstinent. And this is what's happened throughout, that we come here to be of absolute service. Is like just unbelievable that this movement has happened. The last part of what I'm supposed to be speaking about, but it all is that, is step one, two, and three. And given that understanding that we are addicts, and I can tell you that I am so grateful that maybe my bottom was so low, my unhappiness so deep, my knowing that there was something wrong with me all these years, that I was trying to operate. I had two things. I had this very functioning outside world. I'm a people person. I was part of groups and community, and I was functioning in jobs that involved a lot of people and a lot of things, and I was totally unmanageable. I wasn't managing inside at all. I would like really wish that I could have a little cup and sit in a mental institution, and why was I out there having nervous breakdowns while someone else was knitting in? I was living in the world having a nervous breakdown and eating all the time and eating in ways that were definitely not in a normal way. I never ate that it was like just even went and bought the delicious, wonderful things. I ate in a way that was completely compulsive. It was completely deprivating as well. I was not eating delicious things. I was eating in a way that was very torturous and not this thing of love of food. This was not me and my love of food. There was something else going on with me and food that was part of a behavior. And so when I came in, my first meeting, I heard about freedom from the bondage of self. I knew I was in the bondage of self. I knew. I heard it like as powerful as a spiritual awakening where you hear something that shifts you and changes you forever. I knew that I was in the bondage of self, which meant that while everything was going on, while I was this good person who had all these things about being such a people person, I was always in the bondage of self. No matter how giving I was, no matter what charity work I was doing, no matter what, I was in the bondage of self. It was about me. I could not get away from me. I could not ever get away from me. And I heard about compulsive and obsession. I knew I was a compulsive person that did things when I had to and I could not do it. I knew I was obsession. I did it in all sorts of ways. The traffic light, red traffic light three. If the traffic light is, if the number three, it's going to be the number three. The phone's going to ring three times. I mean, I did it with everything in an obsessive way to try and give me the answer of what I was trying to think about. And I understood about the addiction. I understood that there's something that goes on with my food, that when I start, and something happened for me, where in that moment of that first day, 21 years ago, on a Tuesday night meeting at Fountain in Fairfax, I understood that there was something that made me go home. I heard this. I asked someone to sponsor me. I did not eat that night, which is my regret of the day, let me tell you. I have not had my last supper, but I never ate. It was too powerful for me. I never ate. Something happened where I did not eat that night, and then I sat on my bed wide awake, cross-legged. I've got the vision, and it's very funny because I don't have remember a thing. I don't even know what my bedroom looked like at home. But I can remember me on my bed, cross-legged, waiting for the 6 o'clock call. I waited for it. And I knew something had happened already where I made a decision that I was going to do this thing. I made a decision that I was going to do this thing. And in making that decision, I already had a curious understanding that something was happening and that there was something that was powerful that was going to go on. Because I went to that meeting without knowing why I went. And I wouldn't have gone to a place where I didn't know, because my controlling, who's going to be there, what's it going to be, what are they going to say, why I went alone to a church downstairs on a Tuesday night, I will never know. except I will know, because it's God doing for me what I can't do for myself. But something happened in making that decision. And so number one, what happened was I did admit it. That same day, I admitted I was powerless. I knew it. I knew that I was powerless, and I knew that my life was totally unmanageable. And for me, why I'm talking about addiction is it wasn't only that my food was unmanageable. I had something that was really big that was unmanageable. And so I knew that too, that this wasn't just that I couldn't manage my food. I couldn't manage an addiction, and it was big. And I knew it on that very first day, and I understood that that was when I took step one. Step two, that there's a power greater than me that can restore me to sanity. Thank you, God, for telling me I was insane. Please, thank you, thank you. I've tried my whole life. I knew I was. I wished somebody in my family knew it. I wished someone saw that I was struggling with so many problems. I wish someone knew that this little girl had problems and she was struggling her whole life with a mental, spiritual, whatever you call it, insanity that nobody helped me with. And that day of saying, there's a power greater than me, was please help me. Somebody said there's something wrong, and I could say, please help me. And somebody said, we're going to help you. We are going to help you with this thing. And then I made a decision, which I don't know how, but I knew I was going to do this thing. I knew that I was making a decision, which was bigger than me. I made a decision to turn my will, which meant I was not going to do what I wanted. I was going to do this thing, which was to call at 6 o'clock. I was going to go shopping and read those labels. I was going to learn how to do this. And it was bigger than me. Even the way I was shopping, the way I was buying, the way I prepared, the thing was happening. I was going to these meetings. I was walking in. I didn't know anybody. I was asked to read. And then, I had to write questions. I wrote my questions. I read them. There was something that was bigger than my will that was going on. So it's made a decision to turn my will and my life, which meant, and this is the thing that is happening much more now even that I could ever understand, is to let go of a life as I knew it. When I asked the question earlier at one of the workshops was about how am I, I'm in transition of actually turning over the life as I knew it. It's a completely different thing. You cannot be the person with the same beliefs, the same shame, the same guilt, the same behavior, the same low self-worth that does the same behavior to myself and have the life that I was living and become the person who's done the work that I have, who's trying to be a different person, who can see who I was supposed to be from the very beginning and still think that I cannot let go of a life as I knew it, and I'm going to have to open myself to a life that I don't know. I don't know. And now it's about a complete, when they say having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, what it basically is for me now is I don't know anymore. I mean, and this is the ride now, and am I on a ride? I mean, this is to the endless possibilities and the unimaginable of what is coming into my life today that I can't even imagine, good and bad. Let me say, really, I mean, I hope that this has made you, I should have and could have. I've said I had breast cancer. I've also had deaths. I've had a lot of disappointment and a lot of change and a lot of not knowing myself. And trying to still do old behaviors with the same old people, a lot of hurt, a lot of hurt. And now to be in a place where, oh my God, this is not working anymore, and the wall is coming up closer to me, as close as it possibly can, not comfortable. I'm not liking things anymore. And I read recently in the big book, this is what I'm doing with my career at the moment. I'm taking on a lot of work at the moment. I'm choosing to take on the work. I'm wanting to step up and do more work than I even can do. I'm really choosing to do it. What I've read in the big book is that if I'm going to excel and exert myself, I am going to have to not manage my energy foolishly. So now I can't even afford to have all the old behaviors, because if I'm going to manage this energy that's supposed to fulfill this big life that I have, I'm going to have to think how I use my energy, and it can't be used foolishly based on the nonsense that I've used my energy on for my whole life. If I take up the amount of time that I've used my time foolishly, half my life. I could probably say half my life, half this convention. If you want to know how I've used my energy foolishly, half the convention. And I don't have the time for it. I don't, that I'm still doing the same things that are taking up that much time. And then, so I have to not live the life that I have. So it's I'm going to turn my will and my life over to the care. Oh my goodness, care, a word that I don't know. A word that I'm going to take a big stab at compulsive eaters to say that we don't know how to take care of ourselves. Compulsive eaters particularly. I think we have something about the nature of our disease that did not look after ourselves. And that the nurturing that food gave us and the lack of self-care and the self-esteem, the body images, the caring for our bodies in a mental, spiritual, emotional way, in the way of taking the time out for ourselves to feel good, to look good, to eat healthy, to put good things into our bodies. I mean, the real way of like now having care and then to be around people who care for us. To have had a sponsor for 24 years that has cared for me in the way, and the enormous feeling that I have when I actually think about having that kind of care, which is no financial reward or anything else that is, you know, that is just for fun and for free and for service, is like just unbelievable what we get in that care. And so having, I'm going to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of a higher power is to start to know it is still, as we hear, that behaviors have to take a long time because I'm still needing to be told, did you speak to your higher power? Have you talked to your higher power? Did you turn it over? Ask your higher power. It is the prayer that I have, that I want it to be something that I do without thinking, that I know that I am being led, and that if I take a moment and I take that pause, that we get at step three and it says, and then we pause and say, God, grant me the serenity. That's where I offer myself to thee, is in step three where it says, and we pause. And if I can take that pause and recognize that there's a power greater than me at all times and know that, because when I do and I have experienced what it is, when I absolutely just say, okay, I am, every single thing you do is for a reason, everything that happens to me is for a lesson, every reason that happens is because it's supposed to, there is no struggle. There is no struggle. Life becomes about privilege, about gratitude. I become a person that is beyond grateful, that is a person that knows that I am the luckiest person in the world to have this, that I'm complaining about people who just want to help me. I'm complaining about people who want to phone me, who want to take my calls, who want to listen to my stuff, who want to let me reason things out. It's like unbelievable that we have these fellowships that you could go to all over the world. My normie friends say, well, you've got all those people. I mean, I do have all these people who are there to guide and direct me in a way. And as we help other people, you know, to bear witness to those that I can help, that I'm in a position that I can share my experience hope, to give hope to someone else is beyond gratifying. I just wanted to end with, I don't even know where I am. Am I nearly finished or? Half an hour. Oh, I've got half an hour. Okay. So the one piece that I wanted to share was, I've lost what I was going to say. So the one thing I wanted to say about addiction and what my personal feelings are about. And thank God we do say this is my personal experience and this is my, so take what you like and leave the rest. But I do have the causes and conditions that I believe have contributed to my addiction. I have had past trauma and I have had reasons why, as I said, for one, I got involved in deception and lies. Number two, I didn't feel that I got the nurturing that I needed, so I've used substances and from such a young age, the behavior and the stuffing eating from such a young age alone. It was my secret. It was the thing that I did. It was the thing that I had my rituals and the things that I was able to do for food. And therefore, there's some PTSD. I think I've got some ADD. I think I've got a lot of stuff. And the one thing that has happened that has made me deal with addiction in a different way, and much, I did it from the beginning because I was proud. I've always been proud to be in 12 steps. I am a very, very proud 12-step person. I know that we need to be anonymous and not tell anybody that you in a 12-step program, but I tell everybody that I'm in a 12-step program. I think it is esteemable. I think it is completely honorable that I can, it is the thing that I'm proud of. It's the thing that I can dig so deep and that I've had the courage to do the work that we do in here, and I stand up and testify who I am, what I have, what I've done, and that I can make amends, that I can look at what I've done in my life, that I can look at my character defects, that I can take responsibility for my actions, that I can make amends for them, that I can start to have a relationship, be quiet, take my own, look at my part in things, not be a victim, is something that I am very, very proud of. And what also happens is that none of the afflictions that I've had are my fault. And so what is happening now is in my embracing and in my not being so codependent and in my not being such a people pleaser and in my not being so ashamed, and because I had such severe disassociation and I didn't exist in this world, the only way that I could do this was to disappear. I had no sense of self. You were the pretty ones. You wore the dresses. You went to the dance. You got the guy. I didn't mind. I wasn't jealous of anybody. I am not a compulsive eater who looked at everybody's bodies and wished that I could have them. It was just, those are yours. It's never going to be mine. I never even tried. I didn't even care, and I took it to the extreme where I was just a hippie and big flowing things, and our values were not about superficial looks and what people looked like. We were so much more deep than that. Because I could never look at myself. I could never be in my body. I could never just feel if I'm hot or cold, I didn't know if I needed a sweater or not. I could not pee for all day. I would go to school and come back at the end of a long day, and I'd never be, until someone said, "Don't you want to pee?" I mean, it would be, "Oh, okay, I'll come with you." I mean, I didn't know, or if I did, I wouldn't honor it. I didn't know that I could stop and do those kind of things that were good for me. And as, you know, we hear about the hygiene, should I brush my teeth, will I put the moisture, will I put the lotion on my body, just whatever those kind of caring things are. And what's happened now in this stage of my recovery is that I don't want to apologize for being a compulsive eater. I don't want to have any shame around it. I don't want to apologize that I might have had some liabilities and some disabilities and mental illnesses and struggles and insanity and anything that I've created, what I've done. And as we heard earlier, I'm a survivor too. I've survived abuse. I've survived breast cancer. I have survived compulsive eating and many other addictions and things. But there are other things that I have to do too, to sustain those conditions. And there are things like hungry, angry, lonely, and tired that are not good for me. I have some conditions. They're not good for me. I do have to go to a meeting because it's not good for me if I'm out there on my own. I do need to have a structured food plan because if I don't, I am lost in the scrambles of should I, shouldn't I, will I, won't I. There is some deep safety for a person like me to have to end at a certain time and start at a certain time. I have to start the day with the call, and if I don't have to make it at that time, I will never make it. I will never make it. So there's certain things that are going to be good for me that I have to do. I got overwhelmed at this convention. I didn't take care of myself. There weren't clear things of what I'm doing and what I'm not doing here. There are people who trigger me when I try to take control, when I forget what I'm doing here. What I'm supposed to be doing at this convention is to be here as someone who's got 20 years of abstinence. There might be some 21, There might be some people here who want to ask me some questions. There might be some people that I can support. Well, believe me, up till the last few hours of this convention, that has not been on my mind. That has not been on my mind. I have been so triggered about what is and what isn't and how they're doing things. I'm an event person. My job has been doing events. I can do this event, and I know how things should happen at the events and the energies of what's happening with a lot of people who are struggling here. I am affected by a lot of people struggling. I have to know that. You know what I have to do? I have to go for a walk. I have to just go sit with my sponsor. Stop doing that. She lives in Las Vegas. I'm here visiting. What am I trying to do instead of just go sit with her? I don't have to be at the convention. I just have to visit my sponsor. There are things that I have to do that because I'm a compulsive eater, because I have other things, that if I get into overwhelm, if I start to have resentments, if I don't take the breath and the pause, if I don't reason it out, if I don't turn it over to a higher power and ask for help, I'm in big, big trouble. And it happens for me really fast. And that's why I know that I have not left to my own devices. And if I go step out of here, if I step out of here, I don't know where this disease would take me. And it will happen quickly. And I do see it all the time, that when we do this, it is progressive and it happens really fast. And it doesn't matter how many years you've got. And so I respect the addiction enormously. I'm immensely grateful that I don't know how I was gifted with a lifestyle and principles for living that build character and that have changed me in ways that I can't imagine that any old junkie compulsive eater could have been blessed to have a life that is lived with such integrity and a life of service as I give to the world, so the world will give back to me. I'm very grateful. That's me. And so, again, here are, please sign your name if you're going to ask questions, and if anyone wants to ask questions, and if anyone wants to answer questions, please go ahead.
I'm Brendan. I'm a grateful compulsive eater. Sue, thank you for the workshop, and you're a great gift to me. Thank you very much. I loved what you talked about, and I've heard you speak outside of this room about being a user, just a generic user. And I'd love your experience, strength, and hope around things that don't necessarily need another 12-step group. For instance, I know for me, I've gotten out of control with condiments that have no quantity on it. So it's like mustard, all the mustard you want, you know, and I've had enough mustard to choke a small farm animal. So it's like I and you spoke about that in the beginning, how you can get compulsive even within the food plan. Mm. And what is your steps that you go through when you're dealing with something like that?
Thanks, Bryn. It's just to say, everything I speak about is either in this book or I keep on just hearing my sponsor's voice. So I am plagiarizing everything that everyone says, because I was just going to respond and I heard exactly what she would say to Brendan. But what it is that if whenever I am using in my addiction, she would always say that I need to focus on my spiritual condition. My spiritual condition is directly linked to my using. If I am not spiritually fit, I am using. And they are tied together. When I am spiritually fit, I don't want to act out in certain behaviors. I either am acting out or I'm not acting out. And that is why I think I'm still here, is because I've never been clean over a huge amount of time, because there's so many things that I can do to act out. I've experienced what it is to be clean. I've experienced what it is to be in serenity. I've experienced what it is to be living according to a certain integrity and certainly practicing these principles in all my affairs. But what starts to happen in anything, I can stand at the sink cutting something and I would have eaten it before I was going to sit down and have it, and the meal is over. And I can't get over it. I could not stop. I've done it right now. I could not stop. I've had an experience, and it wasn't long ago, in these years, this must have meant I had 15 or 18 years of abstinence, where I went to a friend for dinner, And I told her what to make, protein and vegetables. I said, I need a lot of vegetables. We sat down, there was clean protein and clean vegetables. I didn't feel like I had enough vegetables. She went out of the room and I took food off her plate. And I had the same feeling of, is she going to come in and see me? Is she going to catch me eating vegetables off her plate? And I couldn't not. I couldn't not. And I know the difference. There's times when I would never do that. I would never do that. What's in front of me is enough. Whatever I have is clean. It's good. I'm happy. I'm not involved in it at all. I do not need that extra tiny little piece that I thought was going to be the difference between that and this. I know when I'm doing well. And when I'm not doing well, it's because there are all sorts of other things that are going on that makes me know that I'm either not physically fit, physically, emotionally, spiritually fit, where I'm allowing other things that are taking me out of myself, which is all I ever want is to be present in this world. I can go very, very easily. I went on my own when I was a child. Food always takes me out, and it takes me out in the whole prep. I'm going to go buy it, I'm going to look for it, I'm going to prepare it, I'm going to find it, and I'm going to have it, and I'm going to look for it, and I'm going to have it, and I'm going to look for it, and I'm going to find it, and then what? And I'm out. That's it. The day's gone by. The day's gone by. It can happen with anything. And so I think the way to say that I do it is, if I do level off the tablespoon, it's very, very different than if I don't. I'm in a different spiritual condition. There's sometimes when I'm so easy, I don't even care. There's not a question about it, and there's sometimes time for the life of me, I can't. And there's a difference in how I'm doing. I know that I'm doing well when I am rigid, I am phoning on time. My sponsor will say it to me every time. Now, when you've been phoning someone at the same time for a long, long, such a long, long time, and she is only, because she sponsors lots of people, she's only going to pick up the phone at that time. And I don't phone. It's fair enough. There are times when my ringer was off, where I was so busy talking to a sponsee and I forgot. It happens a lot over the 20 years, 10 times. I mean, it's not a lot. I wouldn't still be working with her if it was such a lot. But it'll happen 3 days in a row. And she'll say, there's something up. I don't mind that you haven't phoned. It's got nothing on me. I know you're abstinent. We're strong. But there is something going on if you haven't called me for 3 days. And we have to look at it. There's something happening. And there always is something that I haven't told her or something else that is going on that is allowing me to do certain behaviors. We can all watch it. We all watch when we see someone. You know it from a sponsee immediately. When suddenly there are things that are happening where this is happening more. We're watching behavior, and you're watching motivation, and you're watching what the intentions are. And I can see clearly when my intention is just to not go to a meeting and when my intention is I'm not going to meetings. So it doesn't take me long to be out of sorts, and it takes me very quick to be in sorts. Because I just have to go back to what I did in the beginning. If I am painstaking about this stage of my development, I will always be amazed. I just have to go back to being painstaking. If I go back to being painstaking, it comes together very quickly. I've got a structure that works. You know, it's just a... And then there's me in it, you know, trying to get around at every corner. Still. And then I hear, which is why I keep coming back, is that I hear my sponsor who's got more years than me say, and then there's going to be a time when you don't want to do that anymore. And then I know I've still got something to look forward to, because there's going to be a time where I'm not trying to cut corners or anything. I would never not because I want it, not because I have to. And obviously that's happened in many areas, but in some it hasn't. I'm doing it at the moment. You know, I'm experiencing freedom from codependency for the first time in my recovery, which means I'm not so busy with everybody else. It's very, very hard for me. It means lonely. If I'm not in your life, it means I'm in mine. If I'm not in yours, it means that I'm going to have to be in mine. And I am struggling being in mine. I've been told to stay in my own lane. I understand it. When you start to be friends with healthy people and you have people that are good for you, they don't want you in their lane. I had people who wanted me in their lane. There are people now who are saying, get out of my lane. That means they don't want me. And so I've got to know they've got their lane, they want me to have mine, and that's how we're going to go on. Very hard for me.
Dave, compulsive eater. I guess, I mean, this is a very personal question for me, and that is, how do you stay stopped? I mean, for the last 32 days, I've called my sponsor on time every day, written every day, gone to the meetings he told me to go to, made my outreach calls, and this is what I always do in the beginning.
Mm.
And then eventually, I get complacent, I stop doing as many meetings, I stop doing what I was doing, and I take my will back and I eat.
Mm.
And I, you know, I gotta stop doing that.
So can I do something with you?
Yeah.
Can you rephrase that? Can you rephrase it differently this time? Not how can I stop, what is different? Say it differently. I'm now got 33 days, say it differently.
Well, I know that if I wanna be around,
no, not if. If you're saying that if you've got one foot out.
Okay.
Stay in. Come in.
I want to stay stopped.
Not what you are. I'm stopped.
Yes.
Not want to. Say, I'm stopped. I'm abstinent.
Okay. I'm stopped and I'm abstinent.
And I'm going to be abstinent. And be abstinent. And we'll do it with you because, Dave, and this is what the thing is. You can't, but we can. You have to stay with us.
Thanks. I hope I can remember what the question is. I'm Lindy. Because it's complicated. You just talked about starting to feel freedom from codependency. And you talked about the two lanes. This is really up for me right now. And I also want to say, love the way you shared the complexity of the isms around the whole compulsive behavior. Really powerful for me to hear. Sometimes when I'm in the midst of, in someone's lane and I don't know, I have 16-year-old girls, twins, and there's that fine line of letting them fail and saying, well, you know, hold on there, you might not want to do that. And I'm definitely in their lane more than I should be. And I'm just starting to see that. I went to Al-Anon for years, but I got my butt to CODA, which is like Al-Anon with on steroids, you know. And it's wonderful, it's great, and I'm starting to see my part in things and having just the slightest bit of understanding of that.
Mm.
It's so difficult sometimes to own your stuff. Mm. But it's harder, first of all, to see it and then to own it.
Mm.
What is the best recipe for helping me continue to own my stuff?
I'm going to phrase it differently. So first, let me say, I don't have two 16-year-old daughters. So I am not sure how to manage to stay out of the lane of two 16-year-old teenage daughters. So that is a very hard question. But what I didn't say about codependency, I was showing you where my struggles are and how I am still working in how I'm dealing with, am I using, am I not using, am I fit, am I not fit. But what I didn't say to you about codependency is that because of this program and the other work I've done, but because of this program, I am experiencing freedom from codependency. And what is happening is instead of me now looking at how I'm in everybody else's business, I'm having the time of my life being in my business. I mean, there's a lot. I didn't tell you enough about what it is to not care so much anymore and to actually realize how much fun it is to not be in the business of everybody else. And if you've never had your own life and you've never been authentic and you've never ever experienced what it is to be differentiated and to have your own life that is mine and I get to do and be who I want to be and I don't care what you think, oh my goodness. If this is what is freedom, it is something that I couldn't have even wished for because I didn't even begin to know that two people are differentiated. I didn't know that I didn't have to have a response to everything that you did or said or did. I didn't know that I have a life which means I think and feel and be on my own and you do. You have your opinion, I have mine. You like this, you don't. So I became what you wanted, and that's what I say about the complete neglect of self, the complete neglect. When you start to understand that the only reason why we have resentments is because we're not taking care of ourselves. They say that that is the only reason that a resentment is you haven't taken care of yourself. You either haven't said no, you haven't set a boundary, you didn't go and take your exercise, you didn't go get a cup of tea, you didn't go and do what you're doing, so now we're completely in a resentment. If you speak up, you say what you want, say what you mean what you say, don't be mean, then we wouldn't be in those resentments. And I must say, coming back to this so that we're not focusing on other programs, I must say that I've done all the other programs, but this is the program where for the first time in my life, I have said, I've got to eat what I eat. And that was the beginning, because I ate what you wanted me to eat forever. And now that I say I can't go to that restaurant or I have to get what I need was the very, very beginning of my freedom. Because I have to. And that's what happens when you're absent. You can't negotiate it. You can't just go to the Italian restaurant. You can't. There's nothing there. And we also can't just pick up a snack on the road. We have to get our proper meal, which means you're going to have to wait with me, or I'm going to eat before or after, or we're going to another place. And that is unbelievable for someone who never took care of herself, and that I now have to say, I know I'm going to hurt your feelings, but I can't have it. I know you've prepared it for 6 weeks, and I'm still not going to eat it. And I know I'm hurting your feelings. And I'm still not going to eat it. It's amazing what we learn here. And it's not hard for other people. We live in Los Angeles, those of us that do. There are people who want a gluten pop. They wouldn't have a this. They want it prepared like that. They don't care to ask for their needs. They don't care. But I hope I didn't offend him to ask how much does it weigh. They'll tell you what they need weighed and what they need. They don't care. So we're lucky. And you know, even how it is, I'm bringing my Tupperware to your fancy event. I am. No, you can't have a Tupperware at my, I have to. You know, we're amazing that we have to do it. Sorry, I can't eat this. I have to send it back. It's got sauce on it. What do you mean? I can't even have any of it. You mean we got none of it? Even if you wash it, I can't have it. It's amazing. Thanks, guys. Thank you very much. For those of you who ask questions, won't you come sign?